Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Joel and Tony, and we're going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to talk about esports and BlizzCon. Esports are video games that you can play competitively, that you can have a spectator sport, an audience to watch. It's very exciting. There's a lot of people getting into esports these days, and we kind of want to talk about what it's all about. Tony and I are huge fans of esports, and we love to watch it on the weekends after work. And Joel is very new to esports, so he may have a lot of questions for us. But we all watched some finals together over the weekend, so we've all got a pretty good idea of what's going on in the world of esports. So esports started about when video games started, you know, people competing for a high score in a video game. And, you know, you'd have local people trying to see who can get the high score on Pac-Man, I guess. That's where it began. But it really took root in Korea with StarCraft. And that's where it became a spectator sport. That's when leagues got involved. That's when people made their professional career, you know, their primary source of income playing these video games. It took the nation by storm. South Korea, you know, StarCraft would be on television the same way we have football on television or baseball on television. People at work or at school would talk about their favorite players or their favorite teams and how they're doing and things like that and the upcoming tournaments. I played StarCraft when it came out. Certainly, I'm nowhere near as good as any of these players. This is a very high level of skill, of competition. But Tony, when did you get into esports? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, right around or maybe during the time StarCraft II was coming out, I started learning more and more about the various different professional games that are being played. And I think the amazing thing about StarCraft as a spectator sport is that it's kind of like a strategy game similar to like what you can imagine chess, but, you know, sci-fi themed. And the pieces all are moving simultaneously, like it's a real-time strategy game. The reason I compare it to that is just because from a spectator's perspective, you can see exactly what the player sees. So it's kind of like you're almost watching the game from their perspective in that you can anticipate what might, if the casters are doing a good job and everything is going well, the cameras will show you the interesting parts around the field, and you'll be able to see the narrative of the game being played out in front of you. So you're really along for the ride. I mean, playing the game is not too different from spectating the game. And I think that's what makes esports so, you know, addictive and so appealing, is that there's a lot of players that play the game and watch a game. And it's, they're getting a similar experience, something that educates their play experience, because these games have such a deep and complex level of skill that you can attempt to, you know, refine. And then there's so much strategy that you're informed by these professional people that like spend, you know, 8-10 hours a day just grinding away strategies and practicing and scrimmaging with other competitive teams. And they really show like the highest level that can be played. So though my experience kind of started with StarCraft, I'm following mainly just Heroes of the Storm now, which is the tournament that we all met over the weekend to watch. So it's kind of been like a constant thing where like I'll follow what's going on in the scene. And they have an entire league based on professional players that they're paying, you know, at least Blizzard Entertainment does this, though they'll actually pay these pro players, you know, working salary and give them benefits to play throughout the year and to play for one team specifically, you know, in one game. So
I got into watching esports about the same time as you, when StarCraft II came out, which was, oh my goodness, several years ago now. And I think part of the reason why that was such a good time to get into it was because that's when internet streaming and internet video became cheap and reliable and easy, right? Before then, like, we would have no way to watch StarCraft in America because it's on TV in South Korea. There was no internet streaming in 1998. So what are you going to do? But when StarCraft II came out, that's when Justin TV, that's when it became Twitch TV. That's when you could watch it for free at your leisure on your computer. And so that accessibility step really got into place. And now that that's here, where you can go to Twitch TV or you can go to YouTube or you can go wherever and watch these things, anyone can watch them anywhere in the world. And that's kind of the step that they really needed, because there was that, you know, it wasn't going to get on TV in America, so you watch it on your computer, sometimes very early in the morning, because it's was primarily a South Korean thing then, but now it's a worldwide thing. There's teams from China and South Korea and Australia. There's teams from Europe. There's teams from America. There's teams from South America. So, Joel, you're new to esports. You watched a little bit on stream a week or two ago, and then we watched some this weekend. What was your impression?
For me, I always take a big picture look at it, and to me it was fascinating that it's just an example of, as you mentioned, it wasn't possible before, you know, the internet really got to the point where it is today. But I really find it fascinating in the aspect of there are people all around the world doing similar things that we could be doing here. And you're just able to kind of share in that. Doesn't matter what language you speak or where you come from, you're all playing the same game. And mm-hmm. you're able to connect with it mm-hmm. over online, watching these things. We saw the gentleman from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
The name is escaping me right now.
Fnatic.
Team Fnatic.
Yeah.
In the final. And then MVP Black from South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really neat for me to see that these are regular guys mm-hmm. playing the game, and just they're really super good at it.
Yeah, right.
And it's just there's a lot of activity on the screen, but having not played the game myself, it was more of a sort of like a theatrical element to it.
Sure.
Rather than a skill aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it certainly inspired me to, hey, check this game out. I want to see, you know, what I could do mm-hmm. playing this game. So I think that it was a great introduction mm-hmm. to it, seeing the best in the world. And it's just mind-blowing that the tidal wave of esports coming down the pike, it seems like
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of momentum towards making this mainstream.
Yeah.
And I had never, before I spoke with you guys, I remember speaking a while ago with you, you mentioned esports, but I had never imagined it was as big as it was.
Sure. It's grown every year. Like, it was in South Korea, and it was one game in one country for many years. And then it in America had its own scene, had the first-person shooters, had Counter-Strike right. going on, things like that. QuakeCon in Texas was a big deal in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then it exploded over the last, I don't know, decade maybe, 10 years, where now it's all sorts of games with all sorts of people from all sorts of places. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's more players, it's more viewers, it's more money, it's bigger arenas.
Sponsorships and
team formations. And so if you haven't seen any esports yet, you will see some soon, I think, because they're planning things like the Overwatch League next year. They're going to have like regional teams. Like there's a Boston team and two LA teams mm-hmm. and a couple of Texas teams and a London team and Seoul and Shanghai mm-hmm. are going to have their own teams. Unfortunately, there's no Midwestern teams. I wish I could say there was a Chicago right. team.
I'm surprised, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But if you are in, you know, New England, you could follow the Boston Uprising and watch your team play their games in a local venue. Like, that mm-hmm. sounds idyllic. I love that idea. I would love if there was a team I could go spectate here. But maybe it's coming. You know, these are just the initial teams. Maybe right. in a year or two, we'll have a Chicago team or a Detroit team or something like that we can see.
Yeah, and just stepping back for a second to one of Joel's points is that I'm happy that you were able to get the drama out of watching, even though that what you saw on screen can be frantic and like almost visual overload, I'm sure, if you're not sure what, you know, all these abilities or all these characters are doing on the screen. Because I think Blizzard, more than anybody, and this also speaks on your point about the Overwatch League, because Overwatch is a Blizzard game, but they do a great job of highlighting the players' stories. So each individual player may not be necessarily that interesting, but they all share a common goal. And then seeing the team's dynamic kind of before each of the matches was, I think, something that brought a more real and dramatic sense of urgency to who was going to come out the victor, right? Mm-hmm. And so years ago, that didn't really exist in quite the same way. You know, they didn't really have player storylines. It was mm-hmm. more like you were into the game, so you watched the game.
Well, if I can interrupt you for just a second, especially the characteristic that each player has a screen name,
mm-hmm.
and which is really cool, yeah. and also a little bit Daft Punkian,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
where it just removes, you know, a human element to mm-hmm. it. But to see the person behind that screen name is fascinating. You're right.
Yeah, and at the end of, like, Heroes Global, HGC is the Heroes Global Championship, and it goes on throughout the year. I think it's starting back up in January. But at the end of each match between two teams, they interview one person from the winning side. And it's always great to kind of get to know them over the course of the year, get to know the teams and the personalities, because let's say an underdog team just won, you get to, like, see on their face and everything, even though it's like a video call of mm-hmm. all things, you know, it's a lot of the actual competition is done remotely and over the internet. I don't know. You get a good sense of what teams you're just a favorite of because you're liking the personalities. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, like, I wouldn't think that I would be into, but I think maybe because I'm into the game and now I'm actually watching more of it regularly, I can just say that they do a great job producing it. And that's one of the things that they've really stepped up in recent history, and what gives it legitimacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it gives it legitimacy. If esports are going to be considered even possibility for an Olympic sport, which, you know, people are talking about, we're not really sure how soon it's going to happen or what game it would be, because there's so many different games to be played. You have to start with being seen as legitimate from an outsider's perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it's taken a while for it to evolve to that point. So.
Yeah, but it's getting there. I don't know about Olympics. I read somewhere that InControl is going to be on a panel about StarCraft II is an Olympic sport, and that's the dream, of course. That's probably not going to be anytime soon. But yeah, we're getting, you know, we're Blizzard built an arena in LA. We're forming teams all around the country. Like, if you're talking about legitimacy, like, we're getting there year by year.
If I can just interrupt for a second, Japan are allowing visiting esport tournament participators the same type of visas they normally reserve for athletes.
Yes.
Nice. Like, that's what they think of it.
Yeah, which has been a problem in America. How do we visa these people coming in for a three-day tournament and go? And it's like, are they an athlete? Are they a visitor? Are they a skilled professional? And yeah, it's getting to, you know, they're an athlete. They're a competitor. So, like, legally, it's gaining legitimacy. I like that. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was compelling was not the Heroes tournament, but the Hearthstone tournament that we had on nearby. If you're talking about player narrative, I mean, that's as good as it gets. It was two teams of three, and they each got two chances for a total of six chances at the board playing their deck. It's a card game that they play, although it's digital. It's on a screen. But it's a card game where you play a card and your opponent plays a card, and they're little monsters that you make fight and things like that, and you see who wins. And one team got destroyed by the other team. And two of his teammates had to leave because they lost both of their chances at the table. And so there was one guy, Kranich, who I've never heard of in my life. And he's up against three guys that I know are good, RDU and Navi and Dog. And I'm like, oh, man, like, they're going to crush this poor guy who's all by himself. But he came back. He came back and he won five in a row, I think, to win the tournament. And that's what you love in sports, right? Mm-hmm. It's the underdog or the unknown Cinderella story out of nowhere. Comes back to win on the biggest stage you can possibly have.
Just and a compelling,
Yeah, we had that on.
Narrative.
We had that on with the volume off, but I was fixed on that, watching that score tick up and watching those games take place. Mm-hmm. So we were watching BlizzCon, and I want to explain what that is. BlizzCon is Blizzard Entertainment makes the video games, and they have a thing every year, BlizzCon, a convention, where it's half press conference where they talk about all their new games or updates to their old games and things like that. And it's half esports competition. And the people who play their games compete for a champion. They compete all year long, you know, on weeknights and on weekends and things like that. There's sometimes mid-year tournaments along the way. But then BlizzCon's the big one. It's the world championship. It's the end of the season. It's the end of the year. They've got a couple of different games that you can watch. And so, like, depending on what you like, there's Hearthstone, which I mentioned. It's a card game. It's very competitive, but it's very slow, very thoughtful. It's not super twitchy, as they say, which means a high level of action and reaction with your hands and fingers, like not a lot of mouse work. It's kind of a drag and click game played at a very high level of skill. On the other hand, you have StarCraft II, which is a game where you control armies with maybe hundreds of little guys, and you got to click all these little guys and send them where you want to send them and have them fight who you want to fight. So if you like two vast armies squaring off on an alien battlefield, you know, StarCraft II might be for you. Or there's Overwatch, where it's teams of six competing to an objective, either hold a point or move a payload or something like that. And you've got all sorts of crazy characters. There's a, you know, Wild West gunslinger. There's a giant gorilla with a laser gun. There's a woman who can jump through time. There's, well, I don't even know who else, Doomfist, and I can think of their names. There's an engineer, and there's a DJ.
Demolitionist.
And Mad Max Roadhog. Like, that one is for, that's your shooter, where you walk around and you try to shoot the other team and advance your position and things like that. But then finally, Heroes was what we watched. Heroes of the Storm, which is a mix of all those characters. Characters from Hearthstone, characters from Overwatch, characters from StarCraft, and they compete on a map The game is called a MOBA, which has the greatest acronym, Multiplayer Online Battle Arena. It's from the mid-90s or early 2000s, so it was back when online gaming was new. And the way it works is you control one character, and you play a team of five versus a team of five, and they kind of fight for territory and try to destroy the other team's towers, try to destroy the other team's fortresses, until you finally push to their home base and destroy their core, as it's called. So if you're into Heroes of the Storm, a thing that you're looking for a lot is positioning, almost like soccer, almost like hockey. If a guy gets out of position, you're like, oh no, he could, you know, they could make a move. They could isolate that guy. They could, in this case, you know, blow him up with magic spells. But in the case of soccer, it's like if this guy's out of position, they can make a pass that, you know, might put them closer to the goal. Kind of the same thing in Heroes. They might be able to kill a guy and advance on a fortress.
Or don't get overextended and, you know, lose your position.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah. If you overextend yourself and you might die, and then maybe your teammates might fall behind you if you're the tank trying to hold things down. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best one to watch. There's a little bit of a learning curve. It's really best if you've played the game and you know the abilities. So it's best played and watched, not simultaneously, but consecutively, I guess.
And on that point, I mean, League of Legends and Dota 2 are two also ridiculously popular MOBAs. And I guess if you've watched or know anything about those two, you could probably very easily watch Heroes of the Storm. But
yeah.
But I think the idea is that you're not the only person that thinks this format is really easy to watch and fun to watch and compelling. It's team-based, but it also features like superstars among the team. And I think it goes at a good slow enough rate that you can take in what happens and digest it, and you know, you can kind of see heroic plays, or you can, it's not all shouting at the screen. It's well paced in that there's moments of more extreme like team fighting or more extreme large scale play, strategy play, like macro play.
Sure. And I think that Finals was a great illustration of the different types of games that you can see. Like of the four games that we saw, one of them was very quick, very aggressive. One of them was very slow. The last one was tense. I was sitting very still and very quiet. I didn't want to breathe. I didn't want to blink because I thought, you know, one false move and this whole game will topple. So it's fascinating the different types of experiences you can have watching these games. Some are very exciting, very rushed. You cheer for your team. And then some are like overtime hockey is maybe my favorite thing in the world to watch.
Especially before DVR.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you might go a period or two or three holding your breath, staring at the screen. You don't blink. And then I had that same experience just the other day watching Heroes of the Storm, watching that game four, because, again, it was the set game that, you know, determines the winner if MVP Black wins. And it was like one false move. One guy steps to the left instead of the right, and the whole game would have changed. So you can have those moments of tension, of engagement, and you can have moments of relief and victory where you cheer for your team or you're excited for your team. You can have moments of surprise when a ancestral healing does or does not go off. For example, a healing spell we're talking about that can bring a character back from the brink of death. You know, maybe they hit it right or maybe they don't. And, you know, that second and a half or however long it takes is agonizing, waiting to see if the character springs back to life or not.
And how would, I'm going to ask you, Joel, what did you think of the casting? I mean, like, did it add stuff to you? If you didn't have any strong reactions to it, that's fine. But what did you think of the casters, like the narratives that they were telling and how they made the drama?
Having very little knowledge of the game itself, but being a big sports fan myself, non-esports fan, you kind of train yourself to listen, especially in hockey or whatever, you hear the pitch of the caster's voice go up. And I heard that with esports. I'm like, oh, and I got just as excited because I knew something big was happening. And maybe to a minutely lesser degree, I was able to still share in the sheer emotion of what was going on.
Sure.
You know, the I can't believe that. Sure, you know? Even though, like, it was hard for me to track the guys on the screen, but besides the parrot.
Sure, the guy, Falstad.
Yeah. Right. But I really enjoyed the casting, and it really, and good casters help educate about the game. Anyone who's watched Eddie Olchek narrate a hockey game. Well, you just learn so much about the game. And I learned a lot about this game, Heroes of the Storm, from listening to these casters.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I enjoyed it a lot. I think that added such – it would be very much missed if there wasn't any kind of casting. To me, that was like almost 50% of the action was listening to them talk about it.
Yeah. And we had very good casters. You see them all year long, and then they come to the finals, and you feel good to see them. It's almost for them like the same experience. Like, oh, I get to cast, you know, the grand finals, the HGC finals. And it was kind of a joy to see. There are also streamers that work the commentary desk. That was interesting. Streamers are guys who are not competitive gamers, but they put on shows for people on Twitch where they're like, you can watch them play the game and you can learn things that way. They can explain to you what's going on and what I'm doing. And they're some of the best insight into the game can be provided by those guys. Mm-hmm. Like between matches, they, you know, I remember a couple of times Grubby broke down. Oh, this guy stepped left, which blocked this magic orb and allowed this character to survive. And you're like, oh, I didn't even see that. Like, that's what incredible reflexes and quick thinking on behalf of the player to make plays like that. Mm-hmm. Like a movie, they say, like, it's half the movie is what you hear. Without the casters, yeah, you'd be missing half the experience. You'd be missing all those little plays, and you might blink during an important maneuver or play or something like that and, you know, miss part of the game. But hearing the casters get excited and the pitch of the voice goes up and the speed at which they're speaking increases, and, you know, anyone would get excited. There are some other games out there. We're talking about Blizzard games because BlizzCon is what we saw. But if you're interested in other esports, there's also Dota 2 and League of Legends. Those are also MOBAs like Heroes of the Storm. And these are bigger than the Blizzard games. Tony and I love the Blizzard games. That's just our particular flavor. But if you want to talk about legitimacy or popularity, League of Legends finals got more viewers than the Stanley Cup finals this past year. Dota 2 has a prize pool of like $17 million going to the top teams. And those go directly to the players. If you win, you just get a check for that much money. That is a lot of money for playing video games, as they say. I mean, it's extraordinarily high skill level, of course. It's not, you know, any kid in their basement can dream of being a pro gamer, but only, you know, the best of the best who practice their whole lives and have the right support and all that stuff.
Going back to the BlizzCon intro for
Fnatic,
when they were doing some human element stories and they were interviewing the parents, and the mom was like, his dad and I, we were big on World of Warcraft, and we'd put him to sleep, and then we'd go play Warcraft together. And it was like, of course, out of two Warcraft lovers comes this Heroes of the Storm expert.
Pro gamer.
You know, exactly. Absolutely. So it's like in the genes.
Yeah.
17 million for playing
Dota
2.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just proving parents wrong everywhere. I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, and there's like a collegiate esports leagues that Heroes of the Storm has. I'm sure Dota has. There's different ways that you can get involved in scholarships for some of these games at some places.
So I believe Robert Morris here in Chicago has a scholarship team for Heroes of the Storm.
We came across someone who mentioned that his son was on the Main West esports team. He was the captain of the esports team at Main West. So.
Awesome. Yeah. So even here locally in and around Des Plaines.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Great. I didn't even know that Main West had a team. I should look into that. Local high school esports.
Yeah.
Just like watching high school football on a Friday night or whatever. So yeah, if you love sports, I love it. If you love video games, maybe you'll love it too. If you want to watch some esports, it's on all the time, depending on what game you like. It's on, like I said earlier in the cast, it's on weeknights, it's on weekends. There's mid-season tournaments. There's big events like DreamHack. DreamHack is a two-day convention either in Europe or America where people show up and it's just 2 days. And it's just like, let's do these tournaments for all these games for Hearthstone and Counter-Strike and everything you can imagine.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on like fighting games and, you know, Street Fighter. Smash Brothers. And
have their own scene. Yeah. And, you know, people come from, again, around the world who, like, find the game, love this game, you know, and dedicate their life to this game. And then, you know, if you hit a certain skill level, like, you can succeed. It can be your career. It can be your life.
Yeah, I was just going to make a small note that, like, the communities, like, we're referring to esports as, like, a singular thing, but really it's a lot of small communities that, that kind of band together, either fight each other online or at a school or, you know, or even at an arcade, because I think the Galloping Ghosts arcade here in the Chicagoland area, it's in Brookfield, like, they have a fighting game team that competes, you know, at different stages, and I think, you know, if you don't have it based in a physical location, I think that might be one of the reasons so many people haven't heard about it. It's not like based in Chicago. Like, there's no Chicago team for a lot of these sports. So that might be part of it. And I think maybe the Overwatch solution that Overwatch is having, then basing these teams in a city, is actually really smart. It'll probably raise awareness to movement and the whole, at least this one game. And then other people might, you know, might be a gateway to other games that they discover that they like or enjoy watching. So.
Yeah. I'm still a little bitter that Chicago didn't get a team, but like I say, maybe next year we can go watch an Overwatch team compete with team colors and a team name and jerseys and all that jazz. So if you want to watch esports on your own, first you got to pick a game or pick several games like I do. I watch Hearthstone, I watch StarCraft, I watch Dota when it's the big show, right? I don't watch it week to week, but when the international comes around, that's what the tournament is called. Like, I'm dialed in. Like, I don't care that I don't like the game. I want to see the tournament. I want to see that money.
Yeah, and there's so much knowledge you probably, like, as not a player, you might not even have for that game, but it's still entertaining.
Still entertaining, still fascinating, still engaging, but it's not my favorite. I will say. Twitch TV is the place to go to see a lot of this stuff. You can also go to YouTube and search for it, and you can go to Overwatch League if you're interested in the teams that are sprouting up around that. You can go to BlizzCon.com and see the event that we just saw. And if you're interested in Overwatch, you can come to the library and you can check it out. We got it on Xbox One and PS4. So see if you've got what it takes to be a pro gamer.
I would just like to point out that Amazon thought so highly of the future of this. They purchased Twitch for almost $1 billion.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't just throw that, unless you're Amazon. But you don't just throw that around.
Yeah.
You know, that's an investment.
Yeah.
And like you said, the merchandising, I'm sure, would probably help, because a lot of the... It's almost like an outlet. Being a fan of something, you get really excited about it. You want to run out and buy that hat or T-shirt or whatever just to proclaim, hey, I'm a fan of this.
Yeah. Let me assure you, they have jerseys with the player name on the back.
Yeah. No, and I think that the more companies buy into it, the more mainstream companies get into it, however belatedly, they'll recognize the financial dividends and sponsorship opportunities and whatnot, and merchandising, because merchandising is, there's always an outlet for that somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think that will be a nice conduit for esports to really grow more.
Yeah. So check out esports. Maybe ask your kids what games they watch. See what they're up to. Watch a tournament with them. It's a good time.
And play.
Play a game. See if you like it. Hearthstone's out on iPad and iPhone and Android. You can just download it and try it.
Rocket League is coming out on the Switch this Christmas season, so get that with your kids and play that. And that's an esport, like, that's played at all sorts of competitive levels.
Rocket League is a fantastic game. Your little rocket cars playing soccer, trying to knock a soccer ball into the opponent's goal. They had a tournament on NBC this past fall. Network TV in America.
Yeah.
Like, how far we've come. We're finally, like, in prime time playing video games. All right, so that's going to do it for the Pint and Click podcast. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Tony. We'll see you next time.